Hello, everybody, and welcome to Reason Town episode 19. Today, I am here with Jared Forsyth.
Hello.
And I am Murphy Randall, and this is Reason Town. First, let's talk about our sponsors because we love them so much. As always, we have TylerMcGinnis.com, which is the linear course-based approach to learning web technologies. Go there and learn about Reason and about other web things. Also, the company I work for, Day One. Love Day One. Thank you for providing time and space for me to do this podcast at Day One. And new sponsor this week, we got a new sponsor, which is the Detroit Tech Watch Conference. The Detroit Tech Watch Conference is sponsoring the audio transcription for the episode this week. So we really appreciate that. Thank you, Detroit Tech Watch. And there have been a couple of you listeners who have clicked the link in your show notes and have donated money to provide transcriptions to those who can't hear but can read. It was just a couple of dollars that we received, so that won't actually buy any transcriptions yet, but we'll keep track of that money, and when it adds up, we'll be able to go ahead and get a transcription for an episode. Sorry if you hear sounds of crunching. That's the water pipes in my ceiling actually making strange sounds, and I haven't gotten it fixed, so nothing's wrong, though. So the Detroit Tech Watch Conference. It's a new conference to look toward the future of software development. A day-long event with nationally recognized speakers to discuss cutting-edge ideas in software development and new programming languages. And there's a discount code specifically for ReasonTown listeners, which is all one word, lowercase, ReasonTown 2019. So if you're interested, go to the Detroit Tech Watch Conference and get 10% off with that coupon. And thanks to them for sponsoring.
And that'll be June 29th in Detroit, as you can imagine.
Great note. Yeah, thanks for including the date. And the place, because you wouldn't want it. Like, what if you were just in Seattle and you're like, well, I want to go.
Right.
Like, where is it?
Yeah. Could be confusing.
Detroit. Okay. Okay. So let's get to some announcements, Jared. You want to give us some of the first announcements here?
Yeah. So ReasonConf 2019 in Austria happened. If you were hoping to go, I hope you did. The videos will be put up pretty soon, but they're not up yet. So look forward to that. Some really exciting looking talks.
Yeah. Neither of us got to go.
So unfortunately, not this year.
We can't testify to the coolness of the talks, but the tweets we saw were pretty fantastic looking, right?
Yeah. Also exciting, ReasonConf US is apparently happening this fall.
Yes, announced there.
Either October or November in
Chicago.
In Chicago.
The organizer's right. Hometown, Peter. Yeah. Peter's great. He's going to make an awesome conference. So yeah, look forward to that. I think I'm probably going to try to go to that.
Yeah.
So if you want to come meet us, or at least me, then think about going to that too.
That's right.
Jared may be otherwise occupied. We'll see.
We'll definitely announce when more details come out.
Yes. All right. Next one. BuckleScript 5.0 and the preview release of BuckleScript 6.0. But we'll talk about that not this episode. BuckleScript 5.0, there were mostly kind of like maintenance changes, mm-hmm. but there were a couple big deals for me that I'll talk about in a second. Do you want to highlight any of the changes on your side, Jared?
I remember there were a couple of just little changes, but some of them were breaking, and so I appreciated that it was a major change following Semver. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
But tell us about what you liked.
I will note the breaking changes were obscure enough that I upgraded without any breakings on my project. I just swapped out for BuckleScript 5 and I was good to go. And I mean, I've done quite a bit of Reason in there. So
that's good to hear.
We were good there. So it's if it's breaking, it's not going to, unless it's runtime representation, then I just haven't noticed, which is possible. But I don't think there were any runtime representation changes.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So that should be an easy upgrade if you're looking at it. The thing I'm really excited about is they have now prepackaged the OCaml compiler binaries with BuckleScript 5.0.
So okay, so you're no longer doing the whole
building the entire OCaml compiler.
Build all of OCaml. Yes. Okay.
So it's way faster to NPM install. Way faster.
That's nice.
That's huge because you know what this means is this actually makes Reason on the server, like on Node.js, it makes it a reality for normal people who aren't going to like break their heads on bundling and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and you don't need to have Docker to be able to run it.
Like, yeah.
So literally I switched to BuckleScript 5 and instantly I was able to deploy on more normal platforms. Like, I can now deploy to Heroku without any sweat at all.
Solid.
It's so fast. And like, the only thing that's required is you got to throw a BSB make world command in your post install. So like, Heroku does an npm install and it installs a binary right away for the OCaml compiler, and then boop, it just goes ahead and
I love
compiles
it.
All your stuff, and you're good to go. It still makes a pretty big bundle once you ship it in, because it includes the compiler right inside
for sure.
BuckleScript. So we're not home free yet as far as like making it super easy, but you know, like my assets project on Heroku is like 128 megabytes. It ranges between 128 and 200. Totally manageable.
Yeah.
Even though it's not optimal, right?
You could probably do something hacky with like in your post install hook, do an RMRF of the compiler directory or something, but
yeah, but that's only if you're worried about it.
Yeah, yeah, as long as it's not a problem.
And in fact, I'm going to skip ahead to one of our later sections, and I'll take a note from our later section and bump it up here for a second. There's a tool for server-side bundling that the people behind now.sh, the Zeit company, they've released. It's really interesting. It's called NCC, and it is made to bundle all of your server-side assets into like a single JavaScript file and bring all the native dependencies along with it.
Oh, right.
So, you know, it's web. It actually probably uses Webpack on the back end, but it's like a zero config. You just run it on your index.js file, and it makes a big index. Or it makes a big JS file, and it takes any of your native modules. Like, you know, if someone's written C extensions, and it puts them in place, and it writes you a new package JSON that just includes the packages that weren't bundled and that need to be rebuilt.
Oh, okay.
So you can run NCC, and then you get this tiny minimal representation of what your code is using. And then inside of that folder, the server, you can run npm run rebuild, and it rebuilds your binaries.
Gotcha.
And you're good to go. And so that's pretty slick. I tried it on my server, and it just worked without
that's fascinating.
Any problems.
Okay.
I didn't extensively test it to the point where, like, I ran it. I don't remember if I tested, Node Postgres, because I didn't need to at that point. But
sure.
What that does is that makes it possible to run your code serverless. If you're into the bleeding edge,
right?
You want to write in Reason and you want to ship it on a Lambda function, or you want to ship it onto now.sh, which they're all about like having tiny bundles so they can have really fast boot times.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're worried about the 150 megabytes of deploying your server on Heroku and you want to go serverless, use NCC, because you can build these tiny server-side essentially binaries. They're not binaries, but binaries-ish.
So would that look like I've got my project that has BS platform in it, and I've got my, say, post install that does BSB make world, and then I run NCC and it gives me a new folder that I then push up to now.sh?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And whenever I make a change, I run NCC again and push it up.
Yeah, and the cool thing, that's right. So you'd probably want to put NCC as your pre-deploy process in your CI. But the part of the cool thing about that is that it completely inlines BS platform. So BS platform becomes a dev dependency now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So all the JavaScript dependencies that are in BS platform get bundled, and you don't need to include any of the binary stuff that comes with it.
Nice.
So it gets really fast to deploy. In fact, if your node server doesn't have any native dependencies, which a lot of them don't,
right?
Unless you're using, you know, database drivers and stuff, then you're going to get one JavaScript file you can deploy, which is pretty sweet.
That's so cool.
So, yeah, take a look at that. So if you're not using native stuff, you can literally use that to just get one JavaScript file, and then BuckleScript's out of the picture. You deploy it, and you're good to go. Except for source maps, which would be
right. Yeah, I was just wondering about source maps.
Yeah, I think they do generate source maps.
Okay.
On their side, but you're not going to get source maps back to Reason, of course, because that doesn't exist.
Right.
But BuckleScript's good enough anyway that you
for
can,
sure
you can do that.
Okay.
So I jumped forward. Now let's jump back. So that's why I was excited about BuckleScript 5. Really cool for server-side stuff.
Awesome. So speaking of version increases, let's talk about Reason React 0.7.
This is a big deal.
This is the one with hooks.
And this is going to make up most of our episode. So we'll mention it, and then let's talk a whole lot about it later.
So it was announced for ReasonConf. It's out, available now. And it's so cool.
And we'll talk about, if you were like, what? Hooks? What is that? And we'll talk about that in a second too. So stay tuned. Don't leave yet. Okay, next one. Onivim 2, an editor, an alternative to Visual Studio Code and to Atom that is native, right? So it's designed to work with native components. So Atom and Visual Studio Code both work on Electron, which right. is like a JavaScript runtime and uses HTML, like a browser, V8 and a browser to run stuff. So they're both kind of heavy. They've got a lot of overhead, yeah, right?
They bundle basically all of Chrome and then run an editor in it.
That's right. That's right. And they have their, each of them have their own Vim extensions, which are of varying quality.
Right.
I'm sticking with Atom so far because its Vim support is better.
It really is.
Various other things. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I learned Vim years ago and I joke that it broke me. I kind of half joke, but I think it's kind of true that like right. I always need Vim plugins now to be able yeah. to work well. So OniVim is created by Reason developers on a Reason framework that the developer has written, which we've mentioned in past episodes.
That's
called
right.
Reverie, right?
Yeah. So Brian Phelps, the creator of Oni, so there was an original version that was based on Electron, but used Vim under the hood, a real Vim, not a fake Vim. And then Brian was looking around at a way to make a native version and came upon Reason and then got super into Reason and now is building a full-fledged Reason native editor that'll be cross-platform and just amazing.
Which means small, fast, high performance. And the best thing is that it's going to be Visual Studio Code plugin compatible.
Right.
Which is mind-blowing. So what that means is that when this is a successful thing, that means you're going to get an editor that has speed like Sublime Text is his main goal is like usability of Atom and Visual Studio Code.
Right.
Speed of Sublime Text. Not that Sublime isn't usable, but the ecosystem has fallen quite far behind, I think you might be mm-hmm. safe in saying. And the power of Vim, right? Which sounds ideal. So he's working on that right now and it's not usable yet, but they're working on the roadmap and it's in pre-order phase. So there's a special deal that anyone who pre-orders it for any amount of money gets a lifetime license. When it's released, it's going to be a subscription fee. So go ahead and look in the show notes and follow that link if you're interested. You could donate, you know, $1 or $10 or $100, whatever you feel you can do right now or it's worth and get lifetime access to that. So that's pretty exciting because that's our Reason stuff. Oh, yeah. So the Reason the plugin thing is cool is that once the editor's out, you instantly have access to a whole ecosystem of plugins, right?
Right.
You can just download the Reason server language plugin mm-hmm. and use it. And then you don't have to worry about being like, well, I love this new editor, but it doesn't work with any of my plugins.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Exactly.
Unless you're an Atom person, then you're host.
That's right.
There you go. Oh, yeah. And I'm also going to take this moment to shamelessly announce my own new podcast, which I'm working on and will be coming out this year, called Let's Web. And the point is to teach newer web developers, to help newer web developers kind of get a grasp of some of maybe the common questions that newer web developers would have by through mentorship. So the plan is that I will be a mentor for 6 weeks or so to a beginner web developer who is
cool,
who will be consistently talking with me through about 6 episodes.
Okay.
And they, in fact, she, I actually don't know how to say her first name because I think it's French, but it's Rhiannon. And I've only ever read her name. I haven't pronounced it, but she's going to be the first season. So each season is one mentee and I should ask how cool. to pronounce her name, but we haven't recorded an episode yet. So, I'll be working with her and we will be, basically I'm going to try to keep it high level. Like, I'm hoping that she will be able to ask me questions about like how to learn, you know, I'm facing this problem and I'm like, well, let's talk about the resources that are available to learn about these concepts and like how right. to make your own decisions about researching these things. I think that some people may be worried that this is just an opportunity for me to like push Reason onto newbies and I'm not going to do that. I am hoping to help new web developers make their own choices about what they like and what they want to use
for sure
and make educated decisions. So that's the goal of that. So if you are a new developer or you are wanting to get into development, please go to letsweb.dev online and give me your email so that I can notify you when the first episode comes out later this year.
Very cool. That's exciting.
Thanks for letting me plug it.
Yeah.
Woo.
I think getting more mentorship in software development is going to be critical going forward to help people level up.
There's definitely, I feel like there are just years of learning the terms even, you know, learning how to think about things.
Yeah. And so many people, you know, are just hitting their head against the wall and it becomes too much. And they're like, well, I guess, you know, this just isn't for me.
Yeah.
And in fact, really what it is this is a new industry and lots of things are still really hard and dumb. And it helps a ton to have somebody who's been there to guide you through it.
Totally. And part of the reason I'm doing this, which is explicit in the podcast description, is that there are lots of tech books that are available to purchase. And I have often wanted to be learning while I'm mowing the lawn. And you just can't read a tech book while you're mowing the lawn as much as I would like to. So the goal here is to make learning with your ears a thing that you can pretty easily do. Because this is my intent is that people who are learning web development are going to be listening to this while they're scrubbing toilets or while they're, you know, in the car ride to their day job or whatever it is. You know, often we're occupied with other things. And so the idea is there, I won't be doing a screen share with Ryan, and it's all audio call purposefully so that, so that the mentee will have to describe their questions all over voice. There won't be any like, oh, this thing right here where they're saying, I'm highlighting this code. This is my problem, right? They have to describe it, and I'll be forced to describe my answers over voice as well. So hopefully it'll all be consumable through audio or through your eyes, you know, if you're audibly challenged. Good I don't call. Know the right way to see that. I apologize if that's wrong.
Yeah.
So there we go. So we have a new section in the show that we're going to do called Table Scraps. You want to start it off, Jared? The idea here is just like it's a collection of small things that don't really fit anywhere.
Yeah. Just little tips and tricks or various call outs.
Mine is the first one. So why don't you skip down to yours?
Oh, okay. So one little call out, if you're using Reason natively, you're probably using Dune as your build system. And over the past couple of weeks, I rewrote the Dune support for my Reason Language Server plugin, which works in VS Code and also Vim and Emacs and wherever else. And so it will be a lot more robust going forward to any changes Dune makes in the future. So hopefully that'll provide you a better experience.
Excellent. I'm going to give a clap for that. Way to go. Here's my little tidbit, and this is really dumb, but when I was starting to do Reason development on the server, I was going crazy because I could never find why things were breaking because I would raise OCaml exceptions and they didn't include a stack trace
right
at all. And I was like, how am I supposed to find out where it broke?
Yeah.
And that's what led me to develop this whole approach that I explained last episode with the promise wrapper and like the error types and stuff until
right.
I feel so dumb. But last week I was like trying to get a stack trace as a string or something, and I found js.xn.raiseError, which literally just raises a JavaScript error. And
right.
I was like, oh, this whole time. I'm glad. I like the approach I have now. But I went, like, you can just raise a JavaScript error and get a stack trace that's accurate.
Right.
So I was just going, okay, so instead of inventing a whole system for like handling and passing promise errors in a type safe way, if you're just wanting to like write safer JavaScript, you can still do that. And you can raise exceptions by just using JSX and raise error. So just don't raise an OCaml exception. If you want to raise a JavaScript exception, do it that way. And I feel like that's a huge help for people who are just like, I want to write my Express server in a more type safe way.
Right. Yeah. I feel like maybe some feedback for BuckleScript would be, it would be nice for OCaml exceptions to have a stack trace.
Totally. Like,
and I'm sure that the reason they don't currently is out of a desire for performance. Mm-hmm. Cause there is some performance penalty to creating a new JavaScript error, getting the stack trace, attaching it to the OCaml error.
Yeah. But it might be worth it.
But yeah, especially like there's a debug mode now for BuckleScript. And so having that turned on, I think would be really valuable.
Yeah, that would be great. And especially if you're going to do runtime server stuff, I mean, in production, yeah, you may want JavaScript exceptions so that you can actually see where things fail. And there's something to be said for the whole let it fail approach, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
So there you go. You can go ahead and start writing your servers now. That's funny because, you know, remember that episode we did a long time ago that said, reason on the server, don't do it?
Oh, right.
Like,
yeah.
Every episode that we've made has gotten closer to do it. And I just, at this point, I'd say do it.
Yeah. Like, all right.
There's no...
We've made it.
We're there. It's still cutting edge, but you're not going to have to deal with nearly the amount of difficulty that I've been through in the last year or so trying to do this.
Totally.
It's in a good place now.
Yeah.
If you know the right things to do. So
that's right. You'll still need to know the external syntax, right? You're going to have to write your own bindings to some node things.
Absolutely, yeah.
But
it's definitely not like Rails status of like, oh, it's just there. You just go do it and it's easy, right?
Right. Yeah. Somebody should really write a Rails for Reason. Reason on Rails.
Reason on Rails. I like that.
Yeah.
It'd be a huge time investment, but it'd be sweet.
It really would.
Yeah.
So somebody just be DHH for a second.
There you go. That's all that's required.
Yeah. You know, start a company, that kind of thing.
That's all. Basecamp, reasonable Basecamp.
Yep.
Okay. Yours next.
Okay, so but before this show, we were talking. Murphy uses the let anything
PPX.
Syntax plugin, PPX, that I wrote.
It's fantastic, by the way.
And the README is not very good. And so we workshopped it a little bit, and now it's got a better README for the section on handling errors. Because you can do let percent anything or try percent anything. And the try syntax didn't make any sense. And now hopefully it makes more sense.
Yeah, this was me being dumb, but I was like, I read through it so many times, the README and the example, and I never got the try syntax until you changed it tonight. So the try syntax is cool. If you're listening and you've never used it before, it basically let percent is map or flat map, and could be used for that. And try could be used for map error, essentially, right? So that's pretty neat. So you can take a look at that.
Yep.
All right. Oh, yeah. And I just want to have a little plug here for switching, for case. My brain is not working right now.
The switch syntax. The switch on a thing.
Yeah, but there's pattern matching. That's the term.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Pattern matching. So if you've never done this before, or if you don't do it very often, I think you're really missing out. So pattern matching is one of the most powerful features of this language. So when you say switch and you pass in a value and you can then define patterns that match different possible cases for that value, well, it's more powerful than you might know, because you can actually switch on two variables in one or three variables in one. You can say switch and pass in a tuple of 1, 2, 3, 4, however many you need to, variables. And then on top of that, you can also add guards to your statements. So for example, you can say like switch on something that's an option. Say you have an option string, right? So you could be like switch on this thing that's an option string. And then your cases, you can have more cases than just some and none. You can have some, is it when or where? I don't remember the keyword. Some, where.
Yeah, I think it's where.
Some, or maybe when. I've been doing SQL, and so I get messed up because where in SQL. So I think it's when.
It's when.
Some stir, when stir equal Jared.
Right.
Right? So that's a case that you can have. Yeah. And so the neat thing about this is it really simplifies your code, because then you just have basically a set of steps that you can fall through to. Because if it doesn't match the first case, it'll fall through to the second. So this keeps you from having like, three or four nested levels of switches and getting totally lost because you're like in some code that's like hundreds of lines deep in some external switch. You can say switch on a tuple of like a maybe and a result. And then you can say like in the case where the maybe isn't defined, but the result is okay and the contents are this string, here's what I need to do. And that might sound convoluted, but when you're writing web servers, you actually run into that quite a bit, where you're writing middleware and you're like, I actually need my body to be defined, and I also need this parameter be in the body, and I need to know if like the existing user on the server has a token that matches the token that's coming in or something. And like, that's a case, you know?
Yeah, and I find myself doing this where I have a number of different values, and there's a happy path, and then everything else is just error.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm destructuring this tuple, and this needs to be present, and this needs to be true, and this needs to have, you know, something on it. And then I can go forward. Otherwise, just the underscore case, you know, return an error and it's fine.
Beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I feel like it's underused by, at least in my code base, it was underused until I recently woke up and remembered it.
Well, and you definitely won't expect it if you're coming from JavaScript, where a switch case is so anemic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 The switch case in JavaScript is like, if someone's like, oh yeah, switch, is that kind of like a switch in JavaScript? You're like, well, yeah, maybe kind of like a Ferrari is a little bit like a scooter with one wheel or something,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. We love JavaScript. JavaScript's great.
We do, but not the switch statement. Not the switch case.
That's true. Yeah, it's rough. Also, a call out. We were bemoaning the state of syntax highlighting in Reason.
Yes.
And what it is the syntax highlighter that's used in VS Code and Atom and a couple other places was just kind of pulled together from some other things. Maybe I think it was based on Rust and with some tweaks. It could really use some love. It breaks down in a number of places. So if anybody is an expert in TextMate grammars or wants to become one, and you want to write a new grammar or just fix up the one we've got, we would love it.
It would be so awesome. If someone came out and they were like, I love grammars, here's a bespoke grammar for Reason that supports all the Reason things and isn't just like cobbled together, we would definitely feature it on the podcast.
Oh yeah, that'd be amazing.
We would love it, and it would be fantastic.
Yeah, we should like set up a bounty for it or something in Bounty Source, because it would just make everything better.
Yeah, if you're interested in like contributing to a bounty for that or something, tweet us on Twitter so that we can put something together.
Right.
Because that would be sweet.
All right, now let's talk about hooks.
Main topic, hooks, Reason React.
Yeah.
What are hooks, Jared?
So hooks are this hot new thing in React. Actually, I'll probably just assume that you know what hooks are. Hooks are a new way to manage state, and they've been all over the internet.
But hold on a second. First we had Redux. Well, first we had local state in components. Then we had Redux. Then we had, what was the next thing? Render props.
Relay.
Relay. And then we had render props. And now we have hooks. Who's to say they're not going to come out with like fishes next? And like, why should I refactor to hooks? Like, I'm actually interested in knowing what's the selling point here versus everything that's come before.
So hooks came out of frustration with the current JavaScript class style components, where in one specific way, it's a step down from the old React.create class, because React.create class had mixins.
Right.
And so you could extract pieces of functionality. A very simple example is an event listener, where I need to do something on component did mount. I need to do something on component will on mount. And if you have a mixin that just encapsulates both of those things, then you can drop it into your component and it's done.
So for example, I may have published a package on NPM that was a mixin that said, if you add this to your React component, then you'll get props that indicate the size of your component on the page in the DOM, for example. Yeah. So that may be like, oh yeah, my component rect mixin. So then I can just use it, and then I don't have to do any funky stuff that's abstracted, and I can just say, oh, my props represent my object size.
Right.
Okay.
So a mixin could include multiple lifecycle methods and also have state. Of course, this there were a number of issues with it, because if you had two mixins that tried to use the same state name, they would clobber each other. And there were some tricky semantics to remember in your head about, okay, what's going to get called first in the lifecycle? Like if my component wants to do something and expect the other thing to have run, is that going to work? But in the normal class inherit from React.component world, there was just no way to do mixins. And so what we ended up with was higher order components where, I'm just going to have a separate component that wraps the child component, and the wrapper component can have state and it can have, lifecycle methods and all this stuff. But then you have all this wrapping, and if you're trying to debug and you look at the render tree and it's a million lines deep, So, and that wasn't awesome. And anyways, it was just a lot heavier in a lot of ways. And so the React team was trying to solve a number of problems at once. And they came up with this incredible solution where, hooks allow you to do kind of mix in like things where you have a function that is that is able to tap into lifecycle methods and is able to have its own state. And you can just reuse it in any component. You just drop it in. There's a lot more, there's a lot more to it that probably doesn't, go well over audio. So look up their documentation, but suffice it to say, going from classes to hooks, at least in my projects, has been super refreshing.
Awesome.
It's allowed me to, for one thing, it's always annoying when you start out with a simple function component and then you're like, oh, I need a little bit of state. Okay, I guess I'll bust it out into a class.
Boom.
And then later on, you didn't need the state anymore. And it's like, well, now this is a class, but it's useless.
I'll just leave it.
Yeah, I'll just leave it. So now unifying that, there's only one way to make a component. It's a function. It's fine. And memoization is better. So like there are a lot of things about hooks that make it more explicit when you're going to be avoiding re-renders.
Okay.
So should component update goes away. And there's a much better way to do it. Anyway, lots of good things about hooks.
So is there like a central place that you would point someone to learn about hooks?
I mean, Dan Abramov has written probably the equivalent of a small book about this.
Okay.
On his blog, Overreacted, but also just the official React documentation on hooks is very good.
Great. Excellent. And I know there are good courses as well, like Kenzie Dodds has done an Egghead course on egghead.io course on hooks as well.
Yeah.
So there's more to learn there.
That's right.
So the new reason React supports hooks.
That's right. So why are we talking about it here on Reason Town? Because we now have hooks in Reason React.
Are they type safe?
Yes.
Wow.
And the one really cool thing about the design of hooks is Reason React with hooks makes so much more sense than Reason React without hooks.
Okay.
So pre 0.7 in the old world of Reason React, the component you're writing looks very different than the corresponding JavaScript component, right? We have lifecycle methods, but they're named differently and they have different semantics and they have different return values and all these things. Mm. And, you know, it's making what was a very JavaScripty thing into a very reasony thing. So there's good reasons for it.
And it basically had Redux built in.
And it had Redux built in, which is cool. But when you go into the React debugger, the React DevTools to look at it, you can't inspect props because it's just a bag of weird functions. and you can't really introspect state very well. There's just all these things that made Reason React kind of a thick wrapper over React made it cumbersome in some ways. Now, I still wrote a lot of code with Reason React because I like Reason and I like React and it worked. But with hooks, the really cool thing about hooks is React with hooks is much easier to translate into Reason so that the component you write with hooks looks almost exactly the same as the component you write in JavaScript.
Oh, awesome.
And the new 0.7 of Reason React gives you props as an object that you can look at.
No way.
Yes.
You mean in
it's
the browser?
It's just normal.
What? So we can use the React DevTools?
You can use the React DevTools again.
This is huge.
It's so, like, it's a breath of fresh air.
Now, you'll still have, like, if you're using an OCaml record, it'll still be a list of
true.
An array of elements. But point being,
yeah,
that's still amazing, right?
Yeah. And the JavaScript that it turns into is kind of true to the original promise of BuckleScript. You might have written that by hand.
Oh, I love it.
As opposed to being, you know, with the wrapper and with, you know, we've got to call into Reason React and do all these things.
Yeah.
No, it's pretty much just JavaScript.
So is this is a breaking change?
It is. They made it so that it's not a breaking change by requiring you to either put a pragma at the top of a file that's using the new style.
Okay.
Or in your buckle script config, in your bsconfig.json, you can specify use the new version.
Oh, that's great. So you can install the new package and keep using the old style.
Yeah.
And then in new components, you can use the new style.
That's right.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
I was very, very pleased that they managed to make it non-breaking.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, if I upgrade, I'm going to have to go refactor all those pages that I did that I haven't touched for a long time, you know, and make it all compatible. Wow. So here's a question I have. Can I use Preact with Reason React? Is that a thing that's... Because they're supposed to be API compatible, right?
That's a great question. So the reason that Reason React 07 can be such a thin layer is because of hooks.
Yeah.
Because hooks are within a function. You don't need any class magic. If Preact supports hooks...
It does.
It does?
Yeah. So that's, to be clear for
those who are listening, API compatible.
Preact is a lightweight version of React that's for people who don't need crazy browser support.
Right.
And for people who, what are the other things? Like, it's like I think it is API compatible with React other than like a few select edge weird things. Or
yeah,
like
yeah.
That.
Some edge case differences.
But like the majority API compatible, it does support hooks.
Oh, cool.
And it's just like way smaller than React.
That's a good thing to test out. I would expect it to work just out of the box.
I wonder how you would swap that in. I don't know where React gets included when you compile a Reason React project.
The easiest / little bit hacky way that you could do it is with a Webpack config to just remap React to Preact.
I'd be interested if anyone's done that, please tell us. That's actually really an interesting idea. Yeah. Because React can be rather heavy, isn't it? Like 700 kilobytes or something like that, uncompressed. I don't know.
I don't think 700. I think maybe 17.
Oh, that's not bad. I thought it was like the size of an image or something like that.
I might be totally misremembering. We should look that up.
Yeah.
Anyway, but Preact is smaller.
I shouldn't make these claims because then the React guys who are on the people on the optimization team are going to be so bummed. They're like, he doesn't even know. He's just blaming us for big code. I apologize. I don't actually know what I'm talking about, everyone. So are you looking it up right now?
I'm looking it up right now. So React 16... minified is 6.5 kilobytes.
Oh, well, I eat my words.
So that's a very small image.
That is very, very small. Now, what about Preact?
Preact.
What?
What?
It's not even smaller.
8.9 kilobytes. So
what?
I'm using bundlephobia.com, which is my favorite website for finding the size of minified bundles. And I wonder if it's lying to me because it's saying that Preact is now larger than React.
That is really interesting.
We're kind of off in the weeds here, but I am astounded.
Well, that's kind of what this show is for, is being off in the weeds, right?
That's true.
So Preact on their website claims to be a 3 kilobyte alternative to React. So it claims to be like half the size of minified React. I think part of their selling point is also that the virtual DOM is their own abstraction that's really close to the metal, is what they say. So it's supposed to be performance and smaller size. Number of other things.
Well, they might have to fight React now. So Bundlephobia says that Preact minified and gzipped is 3 kilobytes.
Ooh, okay. So and what about React?
It's smaller. It's 2.7.
Come on. Oh. So you know what? I don't think I'm gonna experiment with that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm pretty happy with React's performance already. So
right. Also, did you see the new React profiler?
No.
Dev tool? They're making a new version of the dev tools.
Okay.
That has some magic performance profiling built in.
Whoa.
Anyway.
We're living in a day where we can have nice things.
It's true.
We're starting to be able to have nice things.
Yep.
That's pretty amazing.
So anyway, that is React with hooks in a nutshell. Any more questions about that?
Now maybe that's the end of our show. That could be the end of the show.
All right.
Reason React came out with hooks, the end.
We love it. It's great.
Yeah. And since I didn't dive into that yet, I'll have to be looking into that too. As we start we're starting to get back to some front end stuff at day one as well. So that's exciting.
Super.
Okay.
All right.
Well, let's. I have a couple things to wrap up here. Oh no, Jared, can you go to iTunes and look up our podcast while I'm reading the wrap up stuff here? Because I want to say thanks to those of you who went and actually reviewed the show. There were some really nice reviews, and I wanted to read one online, and I forgot to look it up. And
you have 17 ratings.
It's awesome.
I love it.
That's
5 out of 5.
Okay, why don't you pick one to read, and we'll highlight it on the show.
I don't know how to use this website. Okay. Most recent or top one, whatever it is.
Just whichever one your eyes land on.
Okay. Sean Grobe.
That sounds like a name that I know. It's familiar.
Right. Thoughtfulness without the hype. Definitely appreciate the thoughtful approach Murphy and Jared take in this podcast. They can talk about exciting happenings and aspects in the language and community while still keeping the perspective grounded.
Well, thank you, Sean Grobe with a B.
Well, I hope we live up to that.
We really appreciate it.
That's great.
So if you are interested in potentially getting your name read on the show or something, we would love your review as well. So thank you for those who listened and went and gave us reviews.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Last but not least, we're going to do the same thing we said last time. There's going to be a link in the show notes where you can go and offer to donate some money to help get these shows transcribed. For future episodes when we don't have a transcription sponsor, for those who, or for previous episodes if we end up getting a perpetual sponsor. But we want to make these available for those who can't listen to them. So that's it. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Bye.